Personal finance advice in uncertain times. Whether you have money in the stock market or not, the recent wild swings on Wall Street can be nerve-wracking, and there doesn't appear to be an end in sight. So what is the best course of action? Do nothing? Move everything into bonds? Rebalance your portfolio? Buy while the market is low? There are other questions, too. With interest rates at historic lows, is now the time to refinance your home? Or would it be best to put any leftover cash into a safe deposit box or under the mattress? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Main Calling, we have just the person to answer those questions, Gene Chatsky. Chatsky serves as the personal finance editor for the Today Show and ambassador for AARP, and she's here in Maine. What are your personal finance questions for her? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is a challenging time financially. We're facing a volatile market, and planning for the future can be difficult. Today, we'll discuss how to make good financial choices no matter your age. Joining me, Gene Chatsky, who is a journalist, personal finance columnist, financial editor of NBC's Today Show, and AARP's personal finance ambassador. She also founded the multimedia company Her Money. Gene's book, Age Proof, Living Longer Without Running Out of Money or Breaking a Hip, addresses financial help for older people. Gene, thanks so much for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I love that, living longer without running out of money or breaking a hip. We all want that.
Exactly.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Do you have questions about what to do with your investments in this climate? Wondering about current mortgage rates? Are you trying to do your taxes? Share your comments and questions. You can email talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Gene, what brings you to Maine?
Well, I'm here with AARP. There is a bill making its way through your process here in Maine called Work and Save that essentially allows small companies that don't have retirement plans to use paycheck deductions from their employees to fund a Roth IRA. So setting small employees of small companies that don't have access to a 401k or other retirement plan up with a way to save through payroll deductions, which is so important here in Maine because 46% of workers don't have a work-based plan. And what we know from looking at the success of 401ks is that automatic contributions are the only way to make it happen.
Do you know, do other states have similar programs to what's being proposed in Maine?
They do. I've been traveling around with AARP to talk to legislators in some of these states. So Illinois has a plan, New York has a plan, Oregon has a plan. In fact, Oregon has a plan that we're watching very closely because the language about the plan in Maine is very similar to that in Oregon. And what we've seen in Oregon is that people are saving an average of $112 a month, which doesn't sound like a lot in a one-time contribution. But once you put that money in over a couple of decades and you let it grow in the market, we're talking about $50,000. That can make a huge difference in someone's retirement.
All right. Well, I want to read to you a tweet that you tweeted yesterday. This happened, if I'm reading the timing right, this was right after they shut down the market because of the precipitous drop. You tweeted, "I know it's ugly out there, but for the record, I'm holding tight. I'm 55 years old. My husband is 8 years older, but we still have a long time till retirement and even longer in retirement." And then shared an article, "Here's what you need to know about stock market changes." So give folks out there an explanation of why you're holding tight.
I am holding tight because at 55 years old, I'm very young. I could live well into my 90s. So could all of the people who are looking at retirement. Retirement is not a couple of years of your life anymore. Retirement is a 30-year time horizon, sometimes more. And that means that even if you're already entering retirement, you've got a lot of years to weather the ups and downs of the markets. The markets have been going up steadily since the financial crisis. I mean, we've had over a decade of gains in the market, 200+% gains in the market. We knew at some point the markets were going to contract, that we were going to get some sort of a correction, if not a bear market, and we're not exactly sure which this is at that point. But we also know this just happens over time. And the people who got really, really hurt in 2008, 2009 were the people who panicked, who sold, and who never got back in because they missed the last decade. You can't do that. If you have money that you need in the next couple of years, you want to get it out of the market. It never belonged there. But if you've got money that you don't need for the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, then you've got time to wait this out.
So that would be the timetable. If you're looking, if you're in your 50s or 60s and you're thinking, I'm going to need this in 7, 8, 9 years.
But you're not going to need all of it. And I think that's where the misconception comes in. People look at their portfolios and they think all or nothing. And that's not really how it works once you enter retirement. Once you enter retirement, you look at your sum of money and you think about how much of this money am I actually going to need over the next few years? And that money should be shifted into safety. But the amount of risk that you take with your portfolio, it's a continuum over time. It is when set up for success, you take a lot of risk when you're really young because you've got so many years until you need that money. And as you age, you take less and less and less. And one of the things that I'm feeling actually optimistic about at this point is that we've seen a lot of people move their money into target date retirement funds, which if you've got a 401k retirement plan, these are the mutual funds that have a date in the title that lines up with how the year that you expect that you'll probably retire. And those funds take less and less risk as they close in on that retirement date. The last time this happened, those funds were not nearly as popular. When we look back at 2008, people were so overweighted in stocks. They hadn't taken time to rebalance their portfolios because human beings have this habit of saying that we're going to rebalance and then never, ever doing it. But target date funds have been rebalancing for us. And so I think the pain's going to be less this time around.
Mm. You use the word rebalance, and some people are probably thinking right now, well, should I go in and rebalance my funds right at this moment? Maybe I have 50-50 stocks and bonds, and now my stocks are, you know, this is offering an opportunity. Ought people be rebalancing when there's a big shift in the market?
People should look at their mix, and if you set an investment mix in 2008, in 2010, and you haven't gone in and rebalanced, then yeah, absolutely. And any big move in the market is an opportunity to make sure that you're not taking way too much risk or way too little risk for where you are in your financial curve.
All right. I want to talk to you about mortgage rates.
The silver lining.
At historic lows. A lot of people already have a home, already have a pretty good mortgage rate because there have been a few historic lows in the last 20 years. How does one figure out, do I do it again? Do I refinance again with these historic mortgage rates?
Again, it comes back to time. You have to look at how much time you're planning to be in that home and whether it's long enough to recoup the cost of the transaction. So it's a pretty simple calculation. Refinancing a mortgage, if you've been through it before recently, you know how much it cost you. It's probably about 2% of the value of your loan. You look at the cost of that transaction, and then you divide by the savings. And what you get is an answer. If you're going to be in the house more than that number of months, then you do it because you're going to make money. If you're going to be in the house fewer, then you don't do it because you're not going to make money. The other thing I think you need to consider if you're on the bubble is the hassle factor, because right now it's going to be a hassle to refinance your mortgage. Mortgage lenders are up to here. I'm holding my hand above my head for everybody who can't see me. They're very, very busy. So understand if you're wading into the market that it's going to be a little bit of a slog. Mm.
Is there a general rule of thumb? Is it usually a half point is worth it or a full point?
There used to be a general rule of thumb, and it used to be more than a full point. But these days, sometimes about 75 basis points, 0.75%, a half a point can make sense. But again, it really does depend on how long you're staying.
You called it the silver lining.
Well, come on, there has to be something good about all this turmoil that we're going through right now. And I do think we find it in interest rates. We don't just look at our mortgages. We look at our car loans because they can be refinanced too. We look at our student loans. And if we have student loans that we've been sitting a mountain of student debt like so many people do, asking yourself, is now the time when I'm not going to use the federal repayment provisions that might come along with my federal student loans, and I can refi in a private market and get a much better deal that will enable me to pay off this debt much cheaper.
All right. We have so many calls coming in that I'm going to go ahead and go to a few
of
them.
For sure.
And for those of you who missed the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with George, who's calling from West Gardner. Hi, George. Go ahead.
I was just calling about 403B that's pre-tax money, and I was looking at transferring it to a Roth IRA.
George, could you repeat that one more time? My volume was turned down, and I couldn't hear you. So just say it one more time, and I'll pick it up.
Okay, I have a 403B that's pre-tax money, and I get a distribution each year from that, that when I receive it, it's taxable, and I was looking at converting that to an IRA, a Roth IRA.
Well, converting it to a Roth IRA, if you would first have to convert to a traditional IRA, and then you'd first have to roll it into a traditional IRA, and then you could convert to a Roth, if I'm understanding your question. But if you're asking about taking the distribution itself and putting it into a Roth IRA, you can absolutely do that. The money would then be able to grow tax deferred, and you could pass it along to your heirs if that's something that you'd like to do.
George, thanks for the call and good luck to you. We have an email from Ann Lynn. She says, please ask about the, quote, Social Security torpedo tax bomb, which you must plan for way in advance or risk losing much of your Social Security benefits to taxes forever. This happened to me this year. Once you hit 70 and a half and must take a mandatory distribution from your pension fund, it can raise your income into a category where, because of one line on the 1040 Social Security benefits worksheet, where a deduction amount has not been changed in 30 years, you are taxed at a high double-digit rate. It only hits lower middle income retirees. ARG.
I understand the frustration, and this is one reason why what George was suggesting is actually a good idea. As we head toward retirement, having different pots of money, some pre-tax, but some that on which you've already paid taxes, is a good idea, because then in those years where you do get those high distributions from your pension fund, you can sometimes curtail the effects.
All right, another email, this one from Allison. Assuming a run-up of the market, how do we maximize value of stocks in light of the capital gains tax? Invest in stocks with high dividends and hold? For how long? Or wait?
Oh, you know, this is one of those strategies that it's best to approach over time with the help of a financial advisor. When you're looking at trying to pull together which money am I going to pull from when, which is where a lot of these questions are going. Sitting down with an accountant and a financial advisor, even if you only do it for a couple of hours to come up with a strategy that you can then DIY employ over the next few years is, I think, a very, very valuable use of your time.
All right. Well, Allison, thanks for your question. And we'll go to Molly, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Molly. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question about what to do with a lot of assets. I'm in the millennial category, early 30s, living here in Southern Maine, and I'm a renter with my husband and my young daughter. And we have a lot of silver lining assets, as you maybe put it earlier. We've had grandparents pass away and inherit some money from which we're very lucky. And then my spouse has a very serious illness that we did a medical fundraiser for a few years ago and raised a lot of money. But right now it's stable. So it's sort of this like big chunk of change that we have that we're like, should we invest it into an overblown real estate market right now and like lock down what our living costs are? Or is there something else to do with it? We are both like the least money oriented people. So maybe this is a very basic question.
It's actually not so basic, because what you're doing is looking at a lot of different choices and a lot of different time frames. And I would say look at a couple of things. First, when might you need this money? I mean, you said that his illness, and I'm really glad to hear it, is stable right now, which sounds like you don't have a big need for that cash cushion, but could that change? And if the answer is yes, you're going to want to keep at least some of those assets liquid for that purpose. What you would not have wanted to do was tie those assets up in this stock market and watch them drop 10% or more over the past couple of days. That could have been potentially devastating. As far as the question of buying a home, sometimes the overblown, as you put it, housing market can be tempered by really good mortgage rates, which is what you're looking at right now. I'd ask yourself how you want to live. Is this a place where you want to put down roots? Do you believe that you're going to be here for the next 5, 10, 15 years? If so, I think buying a house, assuming you can compare the prices to renting and see that you're going to come out even if not ahead, could be a really good thing to do. And I like to think of putting money into a mortgage as building a supplemental retirement cushion, because you know when you've paid that mortgage down or off, you have that asset to draw on. You can sell it, you can use the money to move somewhere else, or you can live there as long as you want.
Molly, thanks so much for your call. We are going to take a quick break. We're talking with financial journalist Jean Chatsky. You may know her from the Today Show or as AARP's ambassador. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from The New School, a democratic high school igniting passions through student voice. Open house March 21st, thenewschoolmaine.org. And Maine Community Foundation, proud to support Maine Calling, a forum for ideas and issues that matter most. MaineCF.org.
Voters in six more states head to the polls with more crucial delegates at stake.
Let us win the Democratic nomination and let us transform this country.
Will one candidate emerge as the clear frontrunner to face President Trump?
We're better than this moment and we're better than this president.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Join us for live special coverage of Big Tuesday from NPR News.
And that's coming up this evening at 8 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
School leaders across the country are grappling with a tough decision whether to shut down to slow the spread of coronavirus.
Closing the schools before anyone in the schools is sick is a very difficult thing to do, even though it's probably extremely beneficial and much wiser.
More this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up today between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Goodness, thank you. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are discussing personal finance, how to plan and make good choices. My guest, Jean Chatsky, financial editor of the Today Show and AARP's personal finance ambassador and founder and CEO of Her Money. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now is Judith Shaw. She's administrator with the Maine Office of Securities. Thanks for coming in, Judith. And I wanted to ask you, just this morning, I came into an email from your office and you issued an advisory. What do you want people on alert for?
Sure. There's two things that we want people to be on alert for. With any type of big world event, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's some sort of other natural disaster or the coronavirus that we're facing now, we find that scam artists monitor the newspapers. They monitor what's happening in the world just like the rest of us. And so we will see and have seen an uptick in attempts to scam people by saying, oh, I'm a charity, donate money, we're going to make sure that every American gets vaccines. That's one that I've seen. Or we're going to see people who say, I am part of a big company that is trying to develop a vaccine. Please invest in my company. So be very, very cautious about that. We always say check before you invest, call our office, check to make sure that if an investment's being offered, it's registered with our office and that the individuals are properly licensed and regulated. But the other thing to keep in mind is what we're seeing happening with the markets right now and with the halt in trading that occurred yesterday. The thing to keep in mind is don't panic. Don't give in to all of the hype, all of the panic, all of the sound bites that you're hearing. When we invest in the markets, when we invest in stocks, it's for the long haul. We'll ride it out. The market crashed in 2008, but it made a recovery, and we'll make a recovery this time as well.
All right. Well, Judy, I'm struck by how quickly you said you're already hearing about these scam artists. It takes them no time at all.
No time at all. If you think about it, this is what they do for a living. They look for opportunity. And so they're always looking for the next great opportunity to try to develop a scheme, a believable scheme, to sound credible. And people want to help, particularly I've noticed a lot of traffic on Facebook around this idea that someone is developing a vaccine and that people should invest with them to try to develop a vaccine. They look for whatever emotional link they can find in order to convince people to invest. So we have to remember we don't invest with our emotions, we invest with our head.
Judy, I was always taught that in times like this, when the scam artists are out, you shouldn't engage with anyone who solicits you. Only when you initiate the conversation or initiate the investment should you feel like you're on solid ground. Does that work in this scenario?
Absolutely right. It's always good, but especially in these scenarios, to not engage with individuals. If you didn't ask for that information, if you weren't looking for that opportunity, don't engage with individuals. You know, it's very interesting. I sometimes give presentations to high school students, and sometimes I say, get in groups and tell me what type of scam you might come up with. And they almost always gravitate to some sort of world catastrophe as sort of the low-hanging fruit, the easy scam to put together and pull off. If you call 100 people and 20 of them are willing to give you money, you're further ahead than before you made those calls.
So, Judy, before we let you go, tell us how to get in touch with your office if you're approached by someone and you're not sure whether or not that this is a scam.
Sure. The best way to reach us is to call 1-877-624-8551. You'll get a live person. You'll get someone to help you out. Or if you just want more information before you make that call, check investors.maine.gov.
All right. And we'll put all that information on our webpage. Judy Shaw, thanks so much for being here. That's Judith Shaw with the Maine Office of Securities. We'll go to Andre, who's calling from Elliott. Hi, Andre. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to clarify a point from a caller earlier, the gentleman with the 403B. If he's taking distributions from his 403B, I assume he's retired. And just want to clarify, he cannot contribute to a Roth IRA unless he has earned income or his spouse has earned income. So I just want to make sure that we clear the air and make sure that You can't just take distributions from your 403B, assuming that that's your only income plus Social Security, which is for many retirees, and then contribute to a Roth IRA. That's just false. That's all.
Yeah, no, you're right about that, Andre. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Andre, for your call. We'll go to Trish, who's calling from Scarborough. Hi, Trish. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My concern is I'm a retired teacher from Connecticut, and my retirement fund is heavily into stocks, as I can determine. And I wondered, what effect will this stock market crash have on the possibility of my retirement fund sinking even lower or paying even less?
Tell me a little bit more about your retirement fund. Is this the portion of your retirement fund that you're managing yourself, or is this your pension?
No, this is my pension. It's managed by the Connecticut Teachers Retirement Fund. It's not even a state, agency. It's not a stated fund like the state association. It's a private fund for teachers. And I just wanted
your pension fund should be fully up and able to deal with this. The people that manage pension funds have been through situations like this many, many times. And they are not only used to dealing with the ups and downs of the market, but they have invested your money in a way so that they have portions of it in safety so that they don't have to sell into a market like this one.
Trish, good luck to you, and thank you for your call. On the line with us now, we're going to go to Annette Lease. She is a senior financial planner for Machias Savings Bank down east. Thanks for calling in, Annette.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer. Jean, nice to finally meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
So when you work with people in Maine, I understand you emphasize the idea of financial health. And interesting that this is something that Jean really thinks and writes about a lot as well. What does the idea of financial health mean to you, Annette?
Well, the bank recognizes that we need to meet Mainers where they're at. And for us, that means scaling financial advice and access to financial resources. And this may result in services for financially healthy folks, programming for the financially coping, and resourcing for the financially vulnerable among us.
Tell us what you mean by that, Annette.
So we know that a survey that was done about 2018 by the Financial Health Network found that about 28% of Americans are financially healthy, 55 or so are financially coping, meaning living paycheck to paycheck, and we believe Mainers probably fall into that category, and then those among us that are financially vulnerable. These are folks who simply are one paycheck away from eviction. They may have had a foreclosure, or they may have had a car repossessed. They're defaulting on credit cards, et cetera, and that's about 17%. So what we're really trying to do is look at these categories of people, meet them where they're at, and provide resources and access to resources, whether it's family financial planning for the financially healthy, which has been mainstream in Maine for 20 years, or it is financial coaching, which is new to the marketplace at the financially coping level. This is an interesting category of people because these are folks with household incomes that can be greater than $100,000. They generally have two incomes per household, and middle-aged and young families. So these folks are the folks that really need assistance with the budgeting, their cash flow, and they're not saving enough for retirement. The financially vulnerable.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, go ahead, Jean.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, under-saving is a huge problem, but it's an even bigger problem in Maine than it is in many states because the population here is a little older than it is in much of the country. The folks at AARP took a look at the average amount of retirement savings per household. Here in Maine, it's $2,500, which is way too low. Not surprisingly, but also I think why programs that can enable people to save automatically, like the Work and Save program that we're trying to get passed, but also like the programs that you're talking about that just coach people into being a little more mindful of their budget and moving a little bit more to savings are so effective.
Annette, thanks so much for calling in. That was Annette Lease, Senior Financial Planner with Machias Savings Bank. And another thing I think is interesting about this, Jean, is I think a lot of people have assumptions about who can have a financial planner, that that's the kind of thing that rich people have. Mm-hmm. They have a financial planner. And it sounds like you and Annette are both saying everyone can afford a financial planner.
I think there's a difference. Well, two things. I think there's a difference between a financial advisor who maybe somebody who does have a little more wealth hires to run their entire financial life for them, and the concept of seeking some financial advice so that you can do the right thing with your money. If you work for a company that has a retirement plan, generally you can call somebody from the company that administers that retirement plan, call somebody from Fidelity or Vanguard or Schwab, and it doesn't cost you anything. But even if you don't, there is a network of financial advisors out there who will work by the hour. These days, you can pay people for an hour of their time to sit down and have a conversation and figure out, am I on the right track? What do I need to change? And then you go out and you do it. It's like going to a doctor for a physical. The doctor tells you to take a little more vitamin D, and you do that and you feel better.
An email here from Martin. I have children who are just over 20. Great kids, but I'm not sure I've taught them great financial skills. What are the 4 or 5 regular, everyday financial habits or skills that they, and perhaps I, should practice?
I love this question, and I bet you do too. We were just talking about our kids before the show started, and they're right in that age group. You want your kids saving, and you want them saving all the time. If you can get your kids into the habit of saving 15% of whatever it is they're earning from the day they start working to the day they stop working, and that can include any matching dollars that they get from an employer, that's great and it should be enough. You want your kids keeping an eye on their credit. Credit's really important these days, and it is not just a matter of making sure that you are not charging enough. It's really keeping an eye on your credit, because your credit is a window into the world of identity theft, which I'm sure Judy could tell us an awful lot about. Your kids should be every 4 months pulling a free credit report from annualcreditreport.com. They should be talking about money. That's something they should be doing with you, but they should also be doing it with their friends, because it's being able to manage money is a life skill. It's not just a money skill that we put in the corner and bring out when we need it. It's something that we should be doing and talking about every single day. Make sure that they have basic protections in place. That means for your kids, they need renter's insurance. Renter's insurance is so cheap, and too few people actually have it. And then the last thing I would say, and I'd say this particularly to your daughters, it's something that we talk about a lot on my podcast, which is called Her Money. Make sure that you're asking for the salary that you know that you're worth. Every salary that you get for the rest of your life is going to hinge off the salary that you get when you are first out of school. So make sure you do your research to know what you deserve to be paid, and then ask for it.
Well, thank you for that question, Marty. We'll go to John, who's calling from Madawaska. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I recently, a couple weeks ago, took most of my stock investments out of the stock market, put it in the money market. And I'm wondering what signs I should look for to re-enter the stock market.
Oh, boy, John, I think I'd start reentering now. I wouldn't do it all at once. And the markets could absolutely continue to go down. I should tell you, with full disclosure, I am not and never have been a market timer, because I suspect I would be really bad at it. But I think you've missed a decent amount of pain, and you can start dollar cost averaging your money back in, looking for, since you clearly have your eye on these things, looking for some companies or some funds that you've wanted to own for a long time and perhaps felt priced out of.
John, thanks for your question.
You.
Gene, you used an expression that I think some people know and live by, but other people don't know. Dollar cost averaging. Explain that.
Yeah, it basically is what you do if you're putting money into a 401k retirement plan. It just means that you're buying the same portfolio of investments on a regular basis over time so that you're not putting all of your money into the markets on a single day or even in a single month. You're just doing it over a period of time so that as the markets move, you catch some of the highs and the lows.
You're listening to Gene Chatsky here in Maine on Maine Calling. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. If you'd like to send a brief email, you can maybe squeeze one in to talk@mainepublic.org and our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after surgery. Learn more at nerhp.org. And the Midcoast Symphony Orchestra, performing in Lewiston this Saturday evening and Topsom on Sunday afternoon. Tickets at midcoastsymphony.org. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Author and illustrator Barbara Cooney died in Portland on March 10, 2000. A longtime resident of Maine, her literary works frequently focused on the culture, history, and society of her adopted state. Miss Rumphius, Island Boy, Captain Pottle's House, and King of Wreck Island are all set in Maine. She received 2 Caddlecott medals for her work on Chanticleer and the Fox and Oxcart Man, and a National Book Award for Miss Rumphius.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine!
I'm Greg Dalton. On the next Climate One, when climate-fueled disasters destroy our communities, the natural response is to regroup, recover, and rebuild. But should we instead be preparing for managed retreat?
Well, we will be in an area of retreat. Whether it's managed or chaotic, will be up to us.
Building a resilient tomorrow on the next Climate One.
And that's coming up later this afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, understanding how to make wise financial choices. Joining me, Gene Chatsky, who is a personal finance advisor for the Today Show and AARP and has her own company. She is also the author of several books offering financial guidance. The most recent book, Age Proof, Living Longer Without Running Out of Money or Breaking a Hip. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Brenda calling from South Portland.
How are you?
Hi, Brenda. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
So I work as a financial counselor with Evergreen Credit Union. We started the program about 2.5 years ago. We have literally seen hundreds of people come through and take advantage of this free financial wellness program, giving them basic information on items such as credit score, debt consolidation, understanding your DTI, things that most people haven't been taught in school anymore. We're just not given those lessons. So they were really seeking a trusted financial institution to help them sort through this complicated issue.
That's wonderful, actually, and it's exactly what people need. You know, when we talk about financial health, and especially when big corporations talk about financial health, sometimes the conversation veers off into the territory of investing. And am I investing enough? And how are my investments doing? Am I buying the right stocks? But in fact, financial health is so much more about the basics. It's about, am I living paycheck to paycheck? Can I find a little bit of extra money to save? Can I improve my credit score a little bit so that I can get a better rate on my mortgage or my credit cards? And what you're doing, helping people person to person, is exactly what a lot of people need.
Mm. Is it, do you think, Gene, that a lot of people are get to a point in their life where they're a little embarrassed to ask?
No question. And not just embarrassed to ask, but we've been taught, we were raised, that talking about money is rude. Right. So mm-hmm. we come from this place where we don't want to do it. But then no matter where you are, either you are embarrassed because you feel like you don't have enough and you haven't done a good job at this, or you're embarrassed because you've done better than the people in your cohort and you feel like you've done too well. There's no winning in this. But I think the focus needs to be on what we can do to reduce the tremendous amount of stress that we're all under, because the thing that causes the most stress in all of our lives these days is money. And we know there are a couple of moves you can make to bring those stress levels down. So if you can get yourself to a point where you have an emergency cushion. And I know people talk about the 3 to 6 month emergency cushion that everybody should have, that's optimal. That's true. But just aim, if you don't have anything, aim for a couple $1,000s. That'll make you understand that you can get through small emergencies, the kind that come up every single day. Try to put aside 10% for retirement. That's the level at which stress comes down. And set some financial benchmarks for yourself. It doesn't have to be a full-blown plan, but knowing where you're trying to go and what steps you have to take to get there, that also brings the level of stress down.
Brenda, thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Vinny, who's calling from Brownfield. Hi, Vinny. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Yes, there was a recent ruling for 401ks and IRAs that inheritors other than spouses or disabled children would have to use up the inheritance from the IRA and 401k within 10 years, which would be during possibly their young, high-income earning. Is there any way to avoid that?
Sadly, I don't think so, Vinny. This is part of the new SECURE Act. And what you're talking about is that the concept of a stretch IRA, where you could actually stretch the payments out over the lifetime of the person who was inheriting, has been shrunken to that 10 years. So it's going to be on us and all our smart tax advisors to come up with other ways to avoid those taxes.
We'll go to an email from Mary. I'm recently retired and would like to meet with an objective financial advisor to review my retirement funds and investments. I haven't been able to locate anyone who will work for an hourly fee, not attached to specific funds or brokers. How to find these people? And Mary, I don't see in her email what part of Maine she's from, but is there
a national network? Yeah, so there's a national network of fee-only financial advisors who will work by the hour. It's called the Garrett Planning Network, and it's garrettplanningnetwork.com. A lot of these advisors are also members of an association called NAPFA, which is the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors.
All right, and Judy, you said that you also have an idea?
Sure. People could call my office as well. We often have people call my office, 1-877-624-8551. They can tell us the geographic area they live in Maine, and we can give them a list of advisors in their area. There are a number of certified financial planners, for example, in the state of Maine,
and other really highly qualified financial advisors, investment advisors in particular, who work for an hourly fee.
All right. An email from Wayne. Ms. Chatsky states that low interest rates are the silver lining. I take issue with that. As a baby boomer, we were told that we could retire by saving at interest rates that were above 10% risk-free. These days, savers who don't want the risks of stocks have no options to realize what we were told to expect.
Yeah, I totally understand why you would take issue with that. I mean, from a saver's perspective, there are very few places to go where you can get a guaranteed return these days and earn a decent amount. I was looking for the optimistic part of the picture, and that is for borrowers at mm-hmm. this point. If you are borrowing money, you do have a chance to reduce your interest rates. But I would say that we do know there are a lot of people out there who have parked their savings in a bank where it's earning average interest rates. And you can do substantially better than that just by shopping around for a high yield savings account. We've got charts on tables on hermoney.com of the highest interest savings rates in the country, and you can find them by Googling and other places as well. That's worth a look. It's not, you know, it's certainly not a lot, but it's substantially more.
It seems to me that something that seems to be coming up in different areas, but within one theme here, Jean, is that the conventional wisdom, especially for those of us of a certain age, the conventional wisdom maybe no longer holds. I asked you, what is the conventional wisdom about how much a mortgage rate needs to drop? And you said, well, the old logic is maybe out the window a little bit, talking to Wayne, who was taught to be a saver. I'm thinking also the conventional wisdom about balancing your portfolio. Somebody in their 50s used to be considered kind of old, and you wanted to be moving from pretty much all stocks to pretty much all bonds and cash by then. And that's different now, too, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's been different for a while. For a long time, we lived by the rule of 100, which was you could take 100, subtract your age, and that's about the percentage of your money that you should have in stocks. Now, we're living so much longer, it's 110, and some people are even saying it's 120.
Wow. We'll take an email from Bruce here. He says, I really wish every kid in America had to pass a class in personal finance for high school graduation. My wife and I always said that we New England Puritans never talk about money and some other topics with our kids. Our son worked for a great Maine company that offers a Roth 401k, but he has left that job. The company will let him keep it here, there, but will now charge him a fee for that. We think he should convert it to an individual Roth IRA with Vanguard or Fidelity. We think he would then be able to add it to post-tax. Is that correct?
He could roll it into an account with a Vanguard or a Fidelity or any other brokerage firm, and he may save on fees by doing it in that way, and that's a fine thing to do. I mean, the thing that he won't – tax-free money – has to stay separate from taxable money. And so he shouldn't be adding that to a post-tax account, but it is possible to have two separate accounts at the same firm and to sign on to a single page and see them all in one place, which makes everything a little easier from an administrative point of view.
All right, we'll go to Karen, who's calling from Booth Bay. Hi, Karen, go ahead.
Hi, my question is, my husband and I are 57 and 58, and we've just finished up with the helping with tuition portion of our life, and relatively secure in our job, moderate income. And we are now accumulating a cushion where we had been paying tuition and paying for a lot of other things for the kids when they were younger. And I'm wondering if it's more advisable to take some of that cushion and put it on the principal of our mortgage. We have a very manageable mortgage payment, less than we could rent a studio apartment for, but still have a balance, ahead of us. And we did increase our contributions to our retirement account already. So just wondering, how wise.
Yeah, I hear your... I hear where you're coming from because I'm exactly where you are. It feels like you get a raise, right, when your kids are done with college tuition, which is very, very nice. Mortgage money is so inexpensive that I think you could probably do better by just putting the money into a discretionary brokerage account and investing it in a way that lines up with your goals. Now, I do like the idea of getting rid of the mortgage before you retire. And it sounds like you may still be able to do both. But when we look at where to put the next dollar, we look at what the likely return on that money is going to be. With a mortgage, I mean, these days you refinance it somewhere between 3 and 4%. If you invest that money historically, it's done much better than that even after taxes. So I'd say look there.
Karen, good question. Thank you so much. An email from Deb. Our daughter and her partner have blessed us with a young granddaughter who is now 19 months old. They live in Maine and have limited means. What is the best way for us to begin saving for our granddaughter's education?
Love that question. Open a 529 college savings account for that granddaughter and contribute to it on a regular basis. You could contribute monthly with automatic contributions. You can contribute on birthdays. You can contribute on holidays. I think it's an amazingly generous gift for this child's future. She needs this so much more than she needs another toy.
Judy Shaw, I'm sure you have something to chime in with here.
I just wanted to note that in Maine, we have the Alfond matching fund for every newborn in the state of Maine. They automatically get $500 already invested, and an account can be opened up for that child with the state 529 plan through the Finance Authority of Maine, and $500 will automatically go in to start that fund. So it's a great way in Maine, and very generous, the Alfond Foundation, to do that and work with Maine to make that happen for all new babies in Maine.
I have an email from Mike Noble. I'm in my early 70s and blessed to be in good physical health overall. However, my dental health expenses are going to cost a third to a half of our life savings. If I follow the advice of our family dentist for comprehensive treatment, many dentists don't accept Medicare Advantage plans. We welcome your advice. Is this within your realm of expertise?
Wow. It's a little outside my realm of expertise, but I might say, take a look at local dental schools. I mean, maybe there is a way to get some of this work done at a lower price point.
Yeah, University of New England has a dental school. And trying to squeeze in one more question, we'll go to Chris and Raymond. Chris, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Hi. My wife and I have started taking on a means of trying to pay off our debt, and we got a hold of the idea of paying off what you owe the least amount of money on first, and then rolling that payment into what you owe the next least amount of money on. The other way I had heard it said is focus on what you have the highest interest rate on and pay that off first, and then do the same thing working your way down on interest rates. And I was wondering what your thought on the comparison of the two was.
So the first, which is called a snowball, is actually more psychologically satisfying. The second way, where you pay off the highest interest rate first, is called an avalanche, and it's going to save you more money overall. So I'm for that one.
Oh, Chris, thank you for that question. It is our last question of the hour. What a treat it has been to have Jean Chatsky with us. Jean is a journalist and personal finance expert and CEO of the multimedia company Her Money. Lots of great podcasts there. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.